irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Listening to Sam in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning once again. Welcome to the show. Today is Wednesday, August 24th. We've got a great show for you because I have Tori here.
Yeah.
When Tori's here, we have great shows.
Yes.
There you go.
That's true.
That's why she's here. That's we need right. good shows, folks.
Thank you.
How's it going this morning?
It's going well. And you?
Yeah. Good, good. I see there's an earthquake in Italy.
Yeah, 6.2, and it rocked the central part of Italy.
Really?
Yeah, there's towns that are no longer there. Like Amatrice.
Wow, like flattened?
Flattened.
Completely.
Well, they have very old structures. Apparently, some of the new structures stood, but it is devastating.
Wow.
Pescado del
that's
Pronto.
Pretty strong.
Yeah,
you know?
And it's like for them, it's like you shake it and the buildings go down.
Right,
I mean, they're centuries old.
Yeah, and they build with brick and stuff here in California. They build with wood.
Yeah,
you know, because less damage, I guess, less risks and stuff. But it's
no, it was
crazy,
devastating
yeah.
to the central part, and I think there's at least like. Definitely, like...
Yeah, 73 dead.
Yeah, I was going to say close to 100 dead, so it's not good. Right. And apparently there's an attack right now on the American University in Afghanistan, in Kabul.
Oh, wow.
So it's ongoing with shooters and two explosions.
Wow, how wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. So good morning.
Yeah, who would go to a friggin' university in Afghanistan? God. Come on.
What if that was like, that's my safety school.
Yeah, right.
Harvard, Yale.
Yeah, exactly. Where do you want to go? Oh, Kabul is good.
But I think they had an emergency backup plan. What's great is they're prepared there.
Mm.
So I was listening to the radio and they were saying that they tried to get all the class people up, but there's still shootings going on. So
wow.
It's terrifying.
Yeah, yeah. And this seems to happen everywhere. So
yeah,
you're not
every day
anyway,
I come in
you know?
And it's a different location, isn't it?
Right, exactly. And then if you don't have ISIS, you have earthquakes.
Yeah.
So one way or another, you're gonna die. So there you go, folks.
Happy hump day, everyone.
Yeah, happy morning to you.
Well, maybe it could only go up from here.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Earthquakes, shootings, and everything. And now we'll talk about divorce.
Yes.
So there are peak times for divorce.
Wow.
Yeah, which is interesting. They're saying between March and September or August. Between March and August, people divorce a lot. Because they don't want to divorce before the holidays.
Interesting.
Yeah. So so they leave it till January or something, then they start and all that. But it's very interesting. They're saying there's a pattern, you know, between they measured this between 2001, 2015, and they show there's two very specific yearly peaks in March and in August.
Wow.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? So
it's like right before you get your summer bod.
Right, exactly.
You're like, see ya.
Yeah.
Wow.
And people don't want to seem heartless when before the holidays
right.
and stuff, so they kind of wait.
It's so sad divorce is so prevalent that we have to have like peaks. There's peaks of them. That's sad. I thought you're like weddings.
Yeah, but you know what? On the other hand, it's good we have divorce because you're not committed to something that's shitty all your
that's
life,
true.
You know? So you have a way to get out.
I've seen many a happy divorce, to be
yeah,
honest. That's
yeah.
good for both people because they're incompatible.
Yeah.
God bless them.
And you wonder what the hell they were doing together in the first place,
hey.
You know? And spending $100,000 on a wedding or something, and then they divorce 2 years later, you know.
But and at least they divorce 2 years later. They don't have,
yeah.
you know, 10 years and a kid. I mean, that's the hard part.
Yeah, that's a big
you know,
investment.
If you think it's not right, go. Go, go, go.
Yeah.
You have a very short time to live. Earthquakes are coming.
Yeah, exactly. And it doesn't get better, you know. I mean, maybe if you work on it real hard.
Or if there's compatibility. But if there's a real right. incompatibility, my friends that
right.
I've talked to, it's not happening.
No, it's not going to happen,
no.
right? And sometimes you don't realize you're not compatible till years later.
Yeah.
You know, which is amazing.
Yes.
Because you think you know a person right away and everything, but... No, sometimes. And then people grow apart, you know. People change.
Absolutely.
You
and
know?
They adapt.
Yeah.
That's why you got marriage is a hard, hard work. But I think you have to, instead of rushing into it, you got to take your time. That's I dated a long time, my husband, 6 years. And then
wow.
3 years, and then I was like, "Where's my effing ring?"
Right,
like a lot. And then we got, but we spent a lot of time learning and trusting and move. You know, you gotta learn about a person.
Yeah, you really do. You know, yeah. But at the same time, I say, you know, if a relationship requires so much work, maybe it's not worth it. You know?
It should have.
Maybe
some,
it's not meant to work.
There should be advantageous in the end.
Yeah,
the
right.
The balance should go in your favor.
Exactly. But one tip is important when you're in a relationship: you should be happy. If you're not happy,
it seems like the number one goal.
Yeah, there you go. You know, right. Like you said, compatible.
Oh, yeah.
The only reason I think anybody should marry is if you don't want to be with anybody else for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got to realize that this is the person you want to be with and you're 100% sure. Any other reason sucks.
Yeah, and also, you know? If you both make each other better, that's great.
Yeah.
If you both put each other and make each other shitty people, right. Maybe rethink it. You
exactly.
know what I mean?
Yeah, you're
if
not
you both
partners.
Are facing the world together with the same values and you're making each other better, deal.
Right. Exactly.
Deal.
Yeah. So, yeah. So that's it as far as divorce, folks. Yeah. And then finally, before we get to our guests, a couple things. A quick thing is Jennifer Lawrence is a top paid actress today at $46 million a year.
Chump change.
Yeah. Not very bad, right?
That's quite lovely.
And, yeah. And, I mean...
Now, that's interesting because is Kim Kardashian considered... Well, I guess she's not an actress. She's a reality star because she's making more.
Is she making
more? Oh, yeah. I mean, just from her app, she's making more. But it's interesting. She's not an actress. No.
Yeah, no, she's
okay,
no
my
actress.
My bad.
She
my
doesn't
bad.
Get any respect. No, yeah. But at the same time, Jennifer Lawrence, I think, is beautiful. She's a great actress. But, you know, I mean, should anybody make that kind of money, you know?
It's a weird scale, isn't it? Very polarizing. I think that's outrageous. But I hope she gives back. I mean, she seems like a really cool person.
Yeah,
she
probably.
She seems like the girl you're like...
Yeah, I mean, look, if you have that kind of money, anybody would give something.
Yeah, but it's outrageously an enormous amount of wealth.
It is. And just for acting, for crying out loud, it's not like you're really contributing to society. It's entertainment, you know? So, but the bottom line is, and this happens with athletes and everything, it's all based on how much money you make your bosses.
That's what you said the first
time. Yeah,
you
know? And if you're going to make them $300-400 million, they'll give you 46.
Yeah, what is she getting from the advertisements?
Yeah,
you know,
who knows? And all the other stuff. Yeah.
That's right.
You know, but yeah, I mean, just the last Mockingjay movie grossed $653 million.
It's
so what's
great.
For them
I
to
love,
give? Yeah, so yeah. What's $46 million
that's
to
right.
give to her?
And she
know?
Is that Kat Evergreen.
Yeah.
My,
yeah.
Or Everness. Oh, God. I'm not a good fan.
What? Oh, Katniss? The Hunger Games?
Yeah.
Katniss.
Yeah. Man, am I a... Aberdeen?
God, Everdeen.
Everdeen. I was so close.
Well, that's good. I wouldn't even know that.
I love those. I listen to them on audiobooks.
Really?
My parents and I go to the movies to see them. I love them. For some reason... Well, we like that stuff. Lord of the Rings. I mean, we like those more fantasy, sci-fi, you know.
Yeah.
But she's great. She's the face of it.
Yeah,
she's
she really
great.
Is.
She's
and
a good role model for little girls to look up to.
Yeah.
She wouldn't change her body type too much. She's always outspoken about making as much as her male counterparts. Good for her.
Right, yeah. I didn't realize they call her J-Law. Did
J-Law,
you know
that? Of course, because it's close to J-Lo.
Yeah, right, but I didn't know they called her that.
Oh, yeah.
Until
lay
I
down the J-Law.
Yeah, there you go. Wow.
She's cute. She's really pretty.
Yeah, I know. We're in the wrong business.
I know.
I'm telling you.
I'm in that business. I'm just not going anywhere.
Yeah.
So now I'm in the radio. Because I can make $45 million.
Yeah, well, there you go, you know.
That's
and
right.
Never give up. You
no.
never know, you know. Not everybody's Jennifer Lawrence, but at the same time, you know, contribute to society. It's important more than making a lot of money.
And she has. She's been a really good female role model. And she speaks, and people look up to her. A lot of little girls are looking up to that girl.
Really?
She's Katniss.
Yeah.
And she has delivered on a very feminist, powerful way. So she is contributing.
Yeah.
J-Law, if listening,
I guess so,
give
yeah.
me some money.
She does influence some people. That's true.
Yes, little girls.
Yeah.
And little boys. Anybody who looks up and watches The Hunger Games.
Yeah.
It's a great, great
that's true.
Story.
Well, she inspires me, too, to kiss the hell out
yeah.
of her. But, you know. What happened?
Oh, she's cute.
Yeah,
man.
She's very cute.
Yeah.
And finally, before we get to our guests, they say that 75% of Americans say that bilinguals are more attractive.
I think so, too, because you know what? You're innately smarter than me. If you can speak two languages. Oh, my God.
Oh, you mean like
anybody
in general?
Anybody that's bilingual, I just bow down. Give me a break.
Well, yeah, but the thing is that, look, I mean, I was talking about this to someone also who has an accent here on the station. And we were talking about this, and I said, you know, rather than be embarrassed of your accent, you should be proud that you can speak more than one language, right?
I think it's such a turn on that you have two languages. What are you dreaming? Yeah. What do you? I think it's
exactly
great.
And you constantly translate between one and
how
another.
How smart
it
are
makes
you?
You smart.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it really does.
And when people look down on bilingual, if it's like someone that you're looking down on for status, I always look at them and go, well, do you speak another language?
Yeah,
they're
exactly.
speaking yours. You know what I mean? My God. Good Lord.
I know. But I got to tell you, you know, I mean, there's got to be a limit to this because last night I went to, I went out on a limb and somebody reminded me of Bob's Big Boy. So last night I had a few minutes. I thought I'd go and get their, they have like a Big Mac-like hamburger.
Healthy.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know if it's healthy.
No,
I'm
kidding.
But I thought I'd go. But I got to tell you, man, all I was hearing was Spanish there, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't understand what they're saying, mm-hmm. you know. And I should be able to. I'm in America because I want to understand the language, mm-hmm. you know. So I think it's overdone too, you know. But what can you do?
I don't know. I think America is. If you see America as the melting pot, then you're allowed to hear other languages.
No. To hear them is fine, but to run a business, you know, where everybody's like talking like that, it alienates the people. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that when we speak Hebrew and stuff, people are alienated. Mm-hmm. They don't mm-hmm. understand what you're talking about.
It's
so
hard to
we
sort
don't
of,
do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you feel uncomfortable. Yeah. Yeah, I understand that, but I also am like. Wow, they're speaking two languages. This is
yeah.
amazing.
No, that's true. That's yeah. true, you know. But anyway, and also, I guess this is important because apparently Apple is thinking of doing away with the headphone jack on the iPhone.
Yeah, I know.
Because they're making them too thin.
I don't understand this at all. Now, apparently you can have a headphone in your iPhone, the new one, but it's the same port as what you're charging with.
Right. So you have to buy a new one?
You have to buy a new headphone. What the fuck?
Yeah. Or use Bluetooth, which...
That is some bullshit.
Right?
And I love iPhones, but that's ridiculous. Give us a hole.
Yeah.
How much
but you know what? They've done it before. I mean, Steve Jobs did away with floppy drives and...
did away with the screen on the iShuffle.
Right.
But this is ridiculous. I don't want to have to buy. I think that's so annoying.
I know. But, you know, what can we do?
I feel like Steve Jobs would not like this.
Yeah. Maybe not. We never know.
Johnny Ives is still there working it. But, man, that is so frustrating to me because then you can't even listen while you're charging.
Right.
Very strange.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on, man. But
sorry. I'm very adamant about
this. No, I think Apple has lost the way somewhere, you know? I don't know what's going on.
I just think this is a dumb move. Apple, if you're listening to LA Talk Radio, Sam in the Morning.
Exactly.
Tori says boo-boo.
Exactly. We need our headphones. Or we'll go to Android.
That's right. Well,
maybe
I don't know.
That
I don't
will
know. Yeah.
That'll move them to
That's
change
right.
a little bit, right?
I can't put my headphones in. I got like $100 headphones. They're like gold. Give me something. Oh, my God.
I know.
And those earbuds don't go any in my ear.
Yeah. So this is co-founder Steve Wozniak telling them don't get rid of this.
Woz is the best.
Yeah.
If Woz says don't do it, listen to Woz.
Yeah, don't do it.
God dang, stupid Tim Cook. Whatever. I like iPhones. I love Apple, except for the Chinese like
I know,
children
lost,
labor
they've
stuff.
Lost
that's bad.
Way.
But that's pretty crappy about the headphone jack.
Yeah.
Why? How thick is the hole?
Yeah, that's true. Well, maybe they're making a phone thinner than that.
It's not a tunnel.
Yeah, but you know what? Even if they... Why would they make it thinner? I mean,
right.
as it is, it's
I
hard
like
to
it,
hold,
right?
Right?
My husband stayed with the 5.
Yeah.
Because he's like, this is bull.
Yeah, you can't hold this.
Oh, I'm so enraged. Sorry.
All right. Well, folks, enough of this nonsense. We're going to bring in our guest right now. We're joined by filmmaker Dylan Sanford. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Of course. Thank you for sitting by and patiently and everything, because sometimes we get carried away a little bit.
No.
With stuff that happens in the news. But... So thank you for joining us. Are you an LA native?
sort of, I guess. I grew up on the Central Coast. I grew up in Morro Bay.
Which is in California.
Yeah,
right?
It's in California.
Right.
It's about pretty much halfway between LA and San Francisco.
Right, and it's beautiful there.
It's
Morro
gorgeous.
Bay is
yeah,
nice.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Wow, so what was it like growing up there?
Oh, it was amazing.
Really?
Yeah,
you're like near the ocean and stuff, right? Right
on the ocean, And just... We had, I guess, close to an acre, and it was pretty unpopulated. Everybody knew their neighbors. It was lovely. It was quite an
That's
experience.
The way to live,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. So what were your parents doing at the time?
Well, my dad actually works in the industry. He works, or he's retired now, but he worked as a video operator, video control.
I see. But Morro Bay, I can't imagine
no,
much
commuted,
work there.
No, he
commuted,
which is madness.
Yeah.
I don't know how he did that.
Wow.
Right.
But he did that.
But they wanted to live in a nice place.
They wanted to live outside of the
the hustle bustle.
The hustle and bustle.
I feel that,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
I get that now.
And more specifically, they wanted to raise us.
Yeah,
outside of it. So,
cool. How many? Do you have siblings?
I do. Yeah, two.
Two siblings.
Two. Yeah.
Are you the oldest?
Sister. I'm the youngest.
Oh, really?
Baby.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm the baby. Yeah.
I'm a baby too. I'm a baby. It's the best.
And they won't let you forget.
No, but you get everything you want, man. It's the best.
Do you?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well.
Well, maybe she was manipulative.
Yeah,
I was.
Yeah,
I was.
Yeah, it's more telling of the person,
true,
perhaps.
True.
I don't know.
Evil person.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. And so you grew up there.
And then we moved. I went to high school in Redondo.
Nice.
Oh, really? So you went down south.
So then down south.
Right.
And then, you know.
Redondo is amazing. Surf city, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I've never surfed in my life. I
really?
Grew up in two of the best surf places
say,
in
like
California.
Right.
Never even been once. I don't know what my problem is.
I've never been either. I've never been.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's just I'm a clumsy person. It seems a lot of movement.
Yeah.
Well, and Morro Bay is really hard. It's
like
hard to surf there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's
really?
It's cold and rocky.
Yeah.
And,
that's the thing about the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah.
It's cold, you know? I have absolutely no desire to go in the water, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you freeze. It's painful. That's how cold it is. People don't realize that. So that's why our beaches may be nice, but our beaches are not that great, you know? I mean,
they talk
about California and the beach, but there's places with nicer beaches, you know?
Think?
Yeah, like the sand, you know, finer sand.
Oh, sure, like Caribbean and,
And
Hawaii.
And
warmer, Turks and Caicos and Hawaii,
and warmer, cleaner water
that's
things
true.
Like that, you know?
But L.A., man.
Yeah, L.A. is L.A.
We got tar on our beaches.
Southern California. And a lot of seaweed, there you go. Awesome. So, and then you made the move to L.A. later? Or?
Then I actually went to school in New York. I went to NYU.
Nice.
Really? What did you take?
So all the way across the country. For
film and stuff?
I was a double major. I did film and theater. I was acting as well.
So you knew early on that's what you wanted to do?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, pretty early on. I went in as an actor. That was actually how I got in to the school. Which was something that had always interested me, but I didn't necessarily early on I realized that I didn't want to pursue it professionally.
Yeah.
So smart.
It's a hard lifestyle.
Terrible.
Yeah.
And then I also heard from somebody when I first got in there that there was one person who historically had done a double major in acting and film. And so I heard that and then started pounding on doors until somebody said I could do it.
Wow.
Go
so,
get her.
Very
so
cool.
So I did a double major.
Yeah.
Wow.
Cool. And after NYU, what did you do then?
I stayed in New York for a few years. I was working on... anything that would pay. There's a pretty strong independent film community in New York.
Oh, really?
And that's good. You know, it gets you. You can get involved in projects, and you can stay pretty active. But there's sort of a glass ceiling to it too.
Oh, really?
Because it's ultimately it's a small island.
Yeah.
And there's only so far you can go.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
funny. Everyone on the show and me, we all went to New York, and then sometime we were like, we got to come out here.
Yeah, right.
Interesting.
When were you out there?
I was out there in 2004 to 2007.
Okay.
And I was like, I made some good money. I played great roles, but I was like,
were you doing theater?
I was doing film and theater, and I had traveled to do regional theater in Florida, and I was making money for it. It was Actors Equity. And then I was like, at some point, I was like, I got to come out here.
Yeah.
Weird. A lot of people.
Yeah, you kind of hit a wall.
Yeah, I did.
And you know. That is what it is. It's great to have that experience.
Yeah.
But then
eventually.
You realize you have to move to Hollywood.
You got to go where the action is,
the jobs
really.
Are, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And,
so you came back home.
I came full circle.
Yeah.
Back to California.
Yeah.
Moved back here end of 2001.
Okay.
And then been here since.
And then you started get seriously into film here on this side of the
country? Yeah. I mean, when I first got back, I discovered that absolutely none of my contacts crossed over from New York. and I found that out the hard way. And so I lied my way into a job in post-production.
Smart. Very smart.
Got a phone call, said, hey, you know how to use an Avid, right?
Sure.
Absolutely. Downloaded that manual that night, read it cover to cover.
Whoa.
Showed up to work the next day.
Go get her.
So,
So then I kind of stumbled into post production. So I was working in post for almost 5 years.
Really?
Four years.
Was that interesting for you?
It was a great experience, and I was very grateful to have that experience. But you know, it's a lot of time in dark rooms by yourself.
That's
lonely.
That's true.
You know, takes a very specific kind of personality.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's not me.
Yeah. Like someone who's
not
very social. Yeah.
I like people. I like talking to people.
Yeah.
You know, it's not to say that editors don't, but it's just it's very draining in that respect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's a lot of terrible hours. The hours are just really rough. Yeah. I mean,
yeah,
I worked.
It's always
last graveyard
minute,
shifts,
right? Like deadlines.
And it's always at night because someone's messed up, and now it's all on you.
Yeah.
That's what always happens, my friend. You
and you're
out?
And
no,
you're trying to save the day.
Yeah. You're the hero that
no one notices.
No.
Right, exactly. But editing, I think that's a very important part of filmmaking.
It's a very, very good skill to have.
That's how you put
absolutely.
The story together.
Absolutely.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, it's good to have a good understanding. And actually, one of my coworkers was the person who edited my film.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, these are friends of mine that I've stayed close with for a number of years.
And you trust them.
I trust them. And, you know, that's all valuable, obviously, for filmmaking.
Right. Very cool. So you started making contacts here and stuff, and you decided that you're going to do it your way and, you know, not necessarily go and work for someone else. But so you decided to make your own film?
I did, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I work.
I mean, how do you make a decision like that? It seems like so insurmountable
terrifying.
To do, right?
Yeah. Well, I work as a now, since I got out of post-production, I work primarily as a camera operator. So I work in as a camera op on a number of multicam shows.
Uh-huh.
So American Idol, So You Think You Can Dance, all those types of shows.
Like your dad, was this your dad?
Specifically live content.
Was this also like, was that what your dad was doing?
He worked, in that world, which it's kind of ironic because we didn't necessarily, we didn't coordinate so I work in that about half of the time, and then the other half of the time I work as a DP, doing a lot of single camera stuff. I do a lot of cold opens and parody films.
I love that.
So that's been a whole other kind of education that I think has been really great, because I'm basically making short films all the time,
right?
But as a DP. So through that process, you know, after kind of years of doing that, I found myself feeling like I didn't have anything to show for my own experience, you know, for what I wanted to pursue and what I wanted to get back to.
Right. And by the time you've gained some experience and understanding of the industry, you figure, let me do it my way. Let
right.
me do what
exactly.
I want to
naturally,
do.
Yeah.
Exactly. But yeah, it's terrifying. I mean, you know, we have, I have two kids and my job affords me a lifestyle that can support a family. I get health insurance, you know, these are things that are worth their weight in gold.
Right.
But you know, it wasn't necessarily
creatively,
it's not it's not entirely fulfilling to all of the parts of my brain.
Right. Yeah. And many people are like that, you know. I mean, they some people prefer to have the steady paycheck, you know, they have the stability and everything, but some people can't commit to that, you know. It's just like, I can't do the same thing all the time, over and over again.
Sure.
And when you're a double major in NYU, it's like your brain is craving a lot of creativity.
I guess so.
Yeah. You assume, you know what I mean?
Might indicate that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So very cool. So we'll talk about your movie, obviously.
Sure.
For those of you just joining us, we're talking to Dylan Sanford. He's a filmmaker, and he's made the film An Entanglement.
Correct.
Right? Mm. They also wrote here The Entanglement, but I see the poster says An.
Correct.
Okay. An Entanglement. And so now, is this a full feature, short film?
It's a short film.
Okay.
It's about 15 minutes.
15 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we've been doing the festival circuit at the moment.
Right.
And that's, we just did Holly Shorts. And then actually tomorrow we're doing Film Invasion here in town.
Wow, that's cool. What's that, like an event for a movie?
It's this is their first year doing it, so we'll see what happens. But it's it is a festival with kind of a showcase angle. So a lot of the people who are involved in it are industry vets, and part of the idea is to introduce you to new opportunities.
That's great.
So it should be cool.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah, you for know, sure.
First time, so yeah. it's an unknown quantity, but
yeah.
We'll see.
So, I mean, I see you've been nominated for Oscars and everything. Did you so this is
no Oscar noms.
No
Emmy,
Oscar
Emmy
noms.
Emmy noms. And oh, I have Amy. An Emmy. Yeah.
What am I
You
talking?
Do have an Emmy.
I do, yeah.
Nice. Is it heavy?
You know, I don't have the award.
Damn.
I never bothered to get it.
So
but,
cool.
But wait a minute. Why are they saying this here? Okay. This says over the last 2 years, our films, who are they talking about? I don't know. Have been nominated for 2 Oscars and also won an Oscar.
Oh, that's so, probably the PR
okay,
firm.
Okay.
Yeah,
the it can't be the PR firm because yeah. I talk to her all the time. She wouldn't write something like that. But okay, who cares? So you nominated for Emmys
yes.
then?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And he has
And this year as well.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So is this your first film, like all you?
This is the first time that I really threw everything into it. You know, I had done in school, obviously I'd done my own projects and then following school had worked on various things. But this was the first time that I was really leveraging all of the years of contacts
right.
and favors and really yeah. trying to call in everything and
this
make
is the
it.
Everest.
This, yeah, to some extent. You know, I felt like I own my own camera package. There's too many resources that I have at my disposal to be able to say, you know, I can't do it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. So obviously it's still an Everest. It's still a mountain to climb anytime you're trying to do your own project.
Yeah, I can imagine, you know, so.
But yeah, I have no excuse.
Yeah.
Yeah, there right. you go. Yeah. And you don't need an excuse. I mean, you've come up with a great film.
I love
film
the plot. It's that the plot sounds so cool.
Yeah, Thank so you. Let's talk about the film.
Sure.
The film is An Entanglement, and this is starring Shiri Appleby. Is that her name?
Shiri, yeah.
Shiri.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't watch much TV, so I don't know what's going on, but she's famous, right?
Oh, yeah.
People yeah. know her. Yeah, she's been around a long time.
Okay.
I don't know if you'd call her a child actress, but she started pretty young.
Really?
And she's currently headlining the show Unreal for Lifetime.
Which
it's
is awesome.
It's her and Constance Zimmer are the two leads.
Oh. Yeah, see I would know cuz I don't watch that
yeah.
stuff, but okay.
yeah. So she's amazing. She's a really fabulous
yeah.
actress.
Okay, I'm seeing her here. She's beautiful yeah. and wow. Yeah. Okay, yeah, I'm starting to see here. Okay, so now I know who you're talking about. Great. So when you were casting the film, were you doing it yourself? Did you get a casting director? How does it work?
Yes, partially. One of the actors in the film is this guy Sean Bell. Sean has been a friend of mine for close to 20 years, probably.
Wow.
Who I met in New York,
right.
and he is a really amazing actor out of Canada, but he hasn't really crossed over here. He works all the time there, but in terms of you know, Canada kind of has its own glass ceiling, not dissimilar to what we were talking about before,
wow.
where you can be a success in Canada, but no, you know,
Always
outside
so
of Canada,
much.
Nobody knows you.
Yeah.
But he's amazing. He's a really great actor, and I'd known for a really long time that I wanted to work with him.
Mm.
And so right from the get-go, when the idea for this film started gestating,
right.
I thought, you know, we should really write the role for Sean because I'm sure he would do it. I have no idea how we'll get him down from Canada,
right?
But we should get
wow.
him. So I knew that. So that was kind of built in. If we could get him, we wanted him. Shiri, that was an incredible get for us, where I had a list of actresses that I thought would be amazing for it. And it was written, you know, because of my experiences with all of the cold opens and things. You know, I kind of knew how it works with getting a celebrity involved. You know, if you can keep their commitment at a minimum, if you can keep it, you know,
short.
A day,
yeah,
a short day,
they'll do it.
It makes it harder for them to say no,
mm-hmm. right?
You know, if they like the content, that is.
Right.
But as soon as you start saying, "Well, we need you for 6 days, and we're going to be camping out in Joshua Tree," it's
not gonna happen.
No. It's over. Phone call ended. So I knew from the get-go that if we were going to lure some talent, which I thought would be beneficial to us, that we would have to keep the commitment at a minimum.
That's smart. Yeah.
So so it was 1 day with her. Actually, what worked out to about 5 hours we had with her.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
But
you probably worked intensively in it.
Oh, very intensively. All, right? Yeah, it was very. That was nine pages of dialogue that we had to cover in 5 hours. So that's you know, you can only do that with a pro,
right?
Somebody who's
prepared.
Yeah.
Wow, very cool. So,
and then after that, then to fill out the additional roles, we did get a casting agency involved. An agency actually that again. I was fortunate enough to have a friend whose company it is.
So it's true when they say you have to know people in this town.
Yes.
Oh, it's very true.
Right?
Yeah.
Every part of
and
it.
And not necessarily for the reasons that you would think. Mm. More so, you know, I think this is a shining example of I got to work with some of the most extraordinary people out there, and more than half of them are just my friends. Yeah. They're not, you know... they weren't necessarily giving me opportunities, which I think is what people usually associate with that saying. They think, oh, you know, it's who you know so that you can get, you know, get opportunities. But actually, in this case, it was who I know helped make the film better.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that was entirely because they're great talents on their own. You
That's
know?
Awesome. Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about the film itself.
Yeah, it's rad.
An Entanglement. It's got a great poster to it.
Yeah.
And so you've won several awards already, I see here.
We have, yeah.
And we'll talk about the distribution and everything in a little bit. But tell us what the film is about. It's a 15-minute film.
It's 15 minutes. It follows a woman who is approached by a stranger who reveals that he's been hired by her husband to kill her.
I love this.
And but then he makes her an offer that if she pays double, he can, you know, she can turn the hit back on.
That's so cool.
So you know, it's a real simple scenario, which was part of the idea, you know, to try and keep it really streamlined and you know, not overcomplicate it too much.
Yeah.
But focused and with a lot of dramatic potential, which. Yeah. You know, life or death, obviously.
God, the stakes are high.
Stakes are high.
Stakes are high.
High stakes.
And you have to be pretty creative to fit a story in 15 minutes,
yes.
right?
You know, I guess so. I mean, it doesn't feel... It
didn't feel rushed to
you. It didn't feel rushed to me.
Right.
There are some films, you know, I think that they pack way too much story in
right.
5 minutes. 15 is actually,
you
know, on the,
beginning,
on the
middle,
longer
and
end of a short.
Yeah.
Right.
These days, which is funny.
Yeah. I guess I wasn't referring to rushing it, but sort of like focusing on really what's important, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
and being able to say, we take this out.
Sure.
This goes, you know?
Yeah.
And things like that.
What's at the core of the story?
Yeah.
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 It's funny.
Which I think is always necessary, really. I mean,
yeah.
any story, you kind of have to distill down to what its heart is.
Right.
Mm. Can you imagine someone coming up to you and saying, hey, I was hired to kill you? Oh!
Yeah, by your husband.
Yes!
Wow.
I would snip his balls off.
Yeah, I mean, who would believe this, you know?
Crazy.
But that's the thing. Yeah. That's why I want to see the movie.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, good. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God.
Very cool. Now, so that's a story, but we're not going to get to the ending or anything.
Yeah, sure. I'm like, what happened?
Yeah, no spoilers. No spoilers.
Right. So now, if people want to see this, do they have to go to a festival to see it?
No. We had preserved the premiere requirement for quite some time, and then at a certain point we finally released it online. Because the festivals that we're in now don't no longer have premiere requirements.
Oh, okay.
So, so we're in festivals, but we're also online.
Wow,
very cool. Yes. And, so, where can people go and watch it?
It's currently on filmshortage.com.
Okay.
We were also featured as a Saturday short on Ain't It Cool.
Cool.
And then it's on my Vimeo page as well.
Oh, okay. Vimeo page, okay. How do they find that? By your name?
By my name. That's okay. Probably the easiest way, yeah.
Right, Dylan Sanford. And you guys can look up An Entanglement, and you'll find it there.
Awesome.
Now, did you come up with the story, too?
It was my idea, just kind of that morsel. It didn't really extend much further than that initially. But I had a few ideas that I was kind of working with. There was that. And the idea that I wanted it to, it's a fair warning to an audience as well, that it starts abruptly and it ends abruptly.
I love those.
So I thought it would be interesting to kind of pick up at the moment after the moment. So you don't hear the first line spoken.
Okay.
It's what you hear is, wait, what did you say?
Oh, that's so cool.
So it's... It really thrusts you right into it. It takes there's no hand holding.
Right.
And then it kind of yanks you out right before you get any real feeling of resolution.
Wow.
So it's not everybody's cup of tea,
yeah.
But you know, that was kind of the idea of it. So once I had that idea, then I took, that to, my longtime friend who's a writer, and who I've collaborated with a lot as a writing partner, Yancey. And I took it to him and said, hey, here's this idea, but I don't know where to go with it from here. You know, I don't really know how to make it a fully formed story. And so I gave it to him and gave him some parameters and just said, you know, you can't write anything too expensive. We have to limit the production to...
There's no explosions. Yeah.
That's many locations and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I gave him those parameters and then he banged out a script.
Wow.
And I liked it a lot and we went from there.
Wow. So the total filming took you how long?
2 days.
2 days?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So you got cheering one day and then the rest of another day.
Yeah. Yeah, so we shot with her. We got a restaurant, Cindy's in Eagle Rock, a common filming location. We got it at 2 p.m., and she had to be in her car at 7:30.
Oh, my God.
So that was pretty fast over there.
Under pressure.
Yeah, nine pages of dialogue. And then the next day we were in a private home here in Studio City, and that was I think we got there around 4 o'clock and we were done by midnight or 12:30 something like that.
God.
Cool. So yeah, so it was pretty accelerated for both.
Yeah,
cases.
If you're tuning in and you don't know, that's insanity.
Yeah.
Like that's crazy.
Yeah, but again, I feel like that's that's something that I feel not that uncomfortable with.
Right.
Thanks to so much of my experience, you know, I shoot a lot of the cold opens for Conan.
Nice.
And you know, that's the same kind of deal.
Shoot, turnaround is like a day, isn't
it? It's really, really fast, and you really you can't be precious.
Mm-hmm.
You really have to be very specific about how you design your coverage.
Yeah, aerodynamic.
Really aerodynamic.
You know what I mean?
Same thing goes for a lot of the comedy opens. You know, I did one for George Lopez, and like. You know, the whole gag was that it was going to be a laundry list of cameos. Well, when that happens, that means, you know, hey, when...
Tina Fey's here, whatever, you got to get it. Yeah,
like when they're here at 2 p.m., like, sorry, you have to get it. And if they have a hard out at 2:06...
See ya. Yeah,
that's
wow.
It, you know. So I feel like that was good training for me.
It's like you're like a sprint. You're like Usain Bolt. You're a sprinter. You're a sprinter.
Not that I necessarily want to be known for that. But,
no, but I write really fast, yeah. Too. Yeah. And my husband writes very slowly. And there's a stigma of like, well, you're probably not writing very well. But
right.
It comes to me in a full thought.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how it works.
Yep.
You know?
It works.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, it works differently for different people.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't. So let's give some credits where they're due.
Yeah.
So we give credit to Shiri and yes. Sean Bell. You also have Gary Wolf.
Gary Wolf, yeah.
Right. And how did you meet him?
He came to us through the casting agency, through Spitfire Casting. And Gary is a longtime vet as well. You know, he's been around. He's actually Scott Wolf's brother.
Oh, I met him once. I interviewed him.
Scott Wolf?
Yes. Yeah. Very attractive man.
Yes, he is indeed.
That's what he remembers.
So Gary Gary is really great, and he sent in a self tape that was excellent and really blew me away.
Wow, very
and,
cool.
And I thought he grasped what was good for the role, which was that, you know, I was okay with him with the husband's character coming off as a bit dislikable. Obviously,
he's
trying to kill his wife. Right there, you know, I'm okay with an audience having a certain impression of him.
Right.
But he's also within the scene, he becomes so desperate, and it becomes so ratcheted up,
right,
that I thought it was an opportunity to then kind of change it, where you might feel some sympathy mm-hmm. for this person that you've already decided is a detestable human being.
Right.
Now you start to feel like, oh,
that's where it's more interesting. It's not a character.
This guy might be in over his head.
Yeah.
You know, he might be a jerk, but
he probably jumped in too fast at something. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought Gary really captured that. So.
Yeah.
Is self-tapes, do you watch them? And I always do a self-tape. I'm like, no one's watching this. I know
always
it.
Watch everything.
Okay, so you watch every single one.
I watch
okay,
everything.
Good. Okay.
Yeah, I never skip over anything.
Good. Thank you. That makes me feel so much
yeah.
better.
I mean, I can't speak for everybody.
Right, no, I know.
Of course, but I mean, I take that very seriously, and especially...
Because we give so much time.
Especially because of my history as an actor. Like, right. You know, I know how hard that is.
Right.
Plus, you never know where you'll find your next talent.
That's right.
No,
you
know? Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah,
so absolutely. You know, it's so hard to be on the flip side, too, where you're making those kinds of casting decisions. Because I saw people who were great.
Right.
You know, who I can say...
They
unequivocally, hey, that was a great performance. That was a great audition. But it didn't work out in that moment, you know.
Right.
And it's hard. It's really hard to be able to convey that to an actor and not have it still just be a rejection.
Totally.
You know, sorry, you didn't get it. It was a great audit. You killed it.
You're second to Usain Bolt.
But you didn't get it.
Right.
Sorry. You know, that's a really challenging thing, which... I think it's probably why I wasn't cut out for it
an actor. Yeah,
as an actor, you know, that kind of rejection is just tough.
It's terrible.
Yeah,
it's
my
torture.
Sympathies.
Yeah,
my
thank
sympathies
you very much.
And respect.
It's true.
Yeah, the film is an entanglement, and everything has a price. That's the
I love that.
Yes,
and it does sound like it. Like everything has a price. I think every person has a price too, right?
Yes.
I want to know what the amount was that she had to double. Like,
well,
I'm into
you'll appreciate that, I guess. Then,
oh, good. Yeah. Wow. Something symbolic or something.
No, not necessarily symbolic, but you know, I wouldn't say that I researched anything, you know, other than watching Dateline and
Dateline.
Things like that. But you know. When you do read about some of these contract type killings, it's shocking.
Hello.
Sometimes how low it
I
is.
Know.
Everyone thinks that, you know, it's got to be tens of thousands of dollars. No, actually, sometimes it's like a few $100
that is so
that
bad.
People do it for because they need it, you know.
That's true, yeah.
And
I hope I'm not a cheap kill. If someone's out for me, at least make it like over
$10,000. Well, then you might really appreciate the film
because okay,
that actually is a little bit of a dynamic.
Oh, good. Okay, good.
It's the discussion of price.
I love that. I love it.
All right, so if you're in LA, can they still see it at Holly Shorts, or is it over?
Holly Shorts is over. Holly That's Shorts over. Finished on Saturday, I guess.
Okay.
But Film Invasion begins tomorrow.
Okay.
And that's in Studio City, or Sherman Oaks, excuse me.
Okay.
At the White Fire Theater. Tickets are on sale now.
Cool.
And they've got some amazing films. I've seen.
Yeah, those festivals are sounding really interesting.
So much.
Yeah,
yeah.
Increasingly, it seems kind of like that's where some of the interesting curating is going on. You know,
right? Yeah,
everybody's got can shoot a movie that looks great on their iPhone now.
Right.
But that also means that there's a lot of movies out there, and somebody's got to kind of sift through them.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. So. And you know, I think many people are like tired of all the explosions and the car chases and everything. Yeah.
And the
you know?
3 hour long movies.
Yeah, you
I
know?
Can't sit there.
I mean, look at Ben-Hur bomb big time.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, and they spent like a lot of money on this, right? Yeah. So it just goes to show you, you don't have to spend a lot of money to make a good film.
Right. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And especially when it's a drama and it's character-based and everything, you know?
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to do.
Yeah, for us it was well-suited, you know, for a no-budget short, you know.
Now, are you planning eventually to do a feature film as well?
Not necessarily for this one. Let me rephrase that. It was never designed as a pitch piece for a longer film.
Right. I meant a different one altogether.
But yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there are other features that are written that we'd love to work on, and you know, other stuff down the pipeline that we'd love to develop.
Yeah. So you said you'd had experience in post production and also in camera and stuff. Did you actually direct this one?
So I directed this.
You directed this.
But I didn't shoot it. I got a DP to shoot it so that I wouldn't have to focus on that.
Yeah, that's true.
Just for your first
change.
One,
You know, it's hard to do that.
Yeah, for sure.
There's a reason they're two different disciplines.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, it's a lot to focus on.
Yeah.
But I got a very talented DP, Jason Oldak, to shoot it. And it's beautiful. I think it's beautifully shot. I think it's really nicely shot.
Right. And this takes place where? In what town? What city?
You know, it's never stated.
Really?
It could kind of be anywhere, USA, okay. I guess, which I think was kind of the idea. Mm-hmm. Right. It's clearly an affluent story, you know, which, again, that kind of factors into the price.
The price point,
as we
absolutely.
Discussed.
Yeah, right.
But... you know, it's a little bit of that rich people problem type story.
Right.
But
yeah, I guess someone without a lot of money, it's like, here, take a gun, kill my wife.
Right.
Or
you do it yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He doesn't want to get his hands dirty.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, the film is An Entanglement. Dylan Sanford is the filmmaker. Some of the stars are Shiri Appleby, Gary Wolf, and Sean Bell. These are the three main characters in the film.
Correct, yeah.
Are there any other characters?
Not really.
Not really.
Yeah, there's a diner sequence, so there's a waitress and some background.
Right, but background.
But in terms of the principles, that's really it, which again was by design.
Yeah.
You know, the idea was keep it as simplified as possible and minimized so that we could actually accomplish it.
Right. Now, I would also imagine that in a short film, you probably don't have time to make a happy ending of this, right? I mean, you said it ends abruptly. So I don't
know.
It's
all rainbows and unicorns.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know how this can end good.
You know, it can't possibly end well. I mean, that's just the nature of it, right?
Like, in my head, I hope she falls in love with the assassin and they run off in sunset, but I don't know if that happens.
Well, you know, I said it ends abruptly.
Yeah,
so you never know.
There could be
a number of endings.
You never know.
It's up to you.
Great. Well, Dylan, tell people where they can find you. Do you guys have a website for the film at all?
We have our main point of contact is Twitter now. So we're at Entangle Movie on Twitter, and I'm at Black Dog Dylan, and that's kind of the main way that we've been reaching out to people.
Great.
And then, as I said, you know, tomorrow kicks off Film Invasion.
Okay.
For locals who want to come check it out.
Right.
And filmshortage.com has...
Filmshortage.com has it. Ain't It Cool has it. So a Google search...
brings it up.
...generally yields some kind of
result.
Some result.
Very cool.
Which is probably the film.
Yeah.
If you add Shiri in there, then... you'll get a definite hit.
Yeah. Sounds good. Yeah. Well, Dylan, congratulations on
Thank
that.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
I know it's like a baby finally coming out.
Yeah.
And everybody gets to see it and everything. So this is cool.
A long gestating baby.
Yeah, right?
15-minute baby. Yeah. Long time.
Yeah. But it's cool, and you did it on a shoestring probably, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All self-financed. Yeah.
Wow.
Very cool.
So if you're ever thinking you can't go out there today, listen to this. He just did it on his own. Go get him.
Yeah. There you go. You see, there's nothing to stand in your way.
That's right. Inspiration.
Right. Except your fears.
Yes. Which aren't real.
Yeah. Conquer those fears, folks.
They feel real.
But can feel very substantial.
They can feel very real, yeah.
The fears can be substantial.
Very much so.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us. Tori, thank you as always. See everybody tomorrow.
Listening to Sam in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.